We would need to invent brand new words to adequately describe the situation that Palestinians in Gaza find themselves in today. No matter where you look, no matter where you go, there's destruction, there's devastation, there's loss, there's lack of everything. There's pain. There's just incredible suffering. People are living on top of the rubble and the waste that used to be their lives. They're hungry. Everything has become absolutely unaffordable. I was hearing the other day that there were eggs that were being sold for $3 a piece, which is unthinkable for someone who has no salary and has lost all access to their bank accounts. Access to clean water is a daily battle. And for many of them, they haven't been able to change clothes in 7 months because they just had to flee with whatever they were wearing. You know, they were given 10 minutes notice and they had to run away. Many of them have been displaced 6, 7, 8 times more sometimes. I just spoke to a woman yesterday. She's 25 years old. She's a translator. She used to have a career, a home, a future. And she was telling me, I don't even have the strength to hope for water or for food or for shelter anymore. She was telling me she's living with her father and her 82-year-old grandmother and two of her siblings who have disabilities. And she said, I have moved 9 times since the beginning of the war. And every time that they moved, they had to dismantle the pieces of wood and plastic that serves as their shelter. And her father had to carry the 82-year-old grandmother on his shoulders to go find safety somewhere. And they often never even knew where exactly. So she said, I know my home has been destroyed. I've accepted it. I'm not asking for anything other than an end to the war. I just need to be able to go back, make a living. I'm not asking for aid. I want to pay for my own needs, but I need peace for that. And I'm tired of living in fear. And that's one of the things that I find absolutely striking is the determination that people here have to keep moving forward, to keep looking up no matter what. And I'll give you one of the most striking examples of this. I was walking through a camp recently and there was a family, and I've seen several actually, families dig their own, makeshift septic tank with spoons in the sand and grabbing pipes and toilet tanks from destroyed buildings so they can have something that resembles a restroom to make their makeshift tents, because the situation here for water and sanitation is extremely dire. Humanitarians are not allowed to import the supplies to build latrines in displacement sites. And so every family just has to find their own creative way to solve that. So I have been around several humanitarian crises, but you don't encounter this kind of grit everywhere.
And you are in Rafah. What are the level of the dysfunction there and how dangerous, you know, how close the fighting is?
We are currently based in the western side of Rafah, and there the fighting is mostly happening on the east. We were able to see some of the destruction that has happened. We hear the destruction that is happening, and we go for recce missions, but of course it's extremely dangerous, and two of our colleagues went for a recce mission earlier this week, and unfortunately one of them didn't come out of it alive, and the other one is had to be medevaced. So the destruction in Rafah is happening. I haven't personally seen it with my own eyes yet. We have been able to see what has happened in the other areas that Israelis have been attacking. So Khan Yunis, Deir el-Bala, and the northern parts of Gaza. And what I can tell you is that it's rubble everywhere. The level of destruction is unimaginable. And the exception is to find buildings that are still standing. That is really the exception. It's like you will see a sea of rubble, and then every so often you'll find a building that is still standing.
What are the challenges faced by humanitarian agencies in getting aid to civilians in need, particularly while civilians are on the move?
This is my second deployment to Gaza. I was here 4 weeks ago, and in 4 weeks, everything has changed. How you get in and out of Gaza, how you bring supplies in. The majority of the population used to be in Rafah because that was the safer area back then. But now, of course, 630,000 people in 10 days have packed up whatever they had and gone north or towards the coastal areas. The situation is constantly shifting because of the fighting that is so intense. And so that's one of the challenges for the response, is that the minute you put something in place, the minute you think you know something, you actually have to change everything again and you have to start from zero. So that's extremely challenging and it's slowing down the response a lot. The second issue, I would say, is that honestly, it's extremely dangerous. to be here. That's really putting the response on its knees. As you know, there are no safe places left in Gaza. On the last week of my deployment, 7 humanitarian colleagues who also happened to be friends were killed by Israeli airstrikes. And the day that I arrived for my second deployment, now again, we have 2 humanitarians that were struck. We have to be constantly careful with every move. We have to notify warring parties, every movement. And we spent hours submitting paperwork. We spend hours waiting at checkpoints. And so often it is for nothing, because many of the missions that we planned are actually not facilitated. And so we can't carry them out. And then there's all the other stuff that you can imagine, which is that the very poor connectivity, phone, internet, is making it very, very hard to coordinate amongst humanitarian actors. The living conditions are pretty stressful due to the constant soundtrack of war, the drones, the airstrikes. And, you know, in some areas, there's bodies in the streets that we have to pick up to ensure that they get a dignified burial. So we see a lot of very difficult things. It's very challenging mentally and emotionally. And I would say a lot of aid workers are tired. And it's also, I think, hurting the response, because this is a very challenging response. But the worst of all of the issues and hurdles that we face, and it's really unprecedented out of every other context, is how utterly difficult it is to bring staff and supplies into Gaza. It was always the case since 7 October, but since 7 May, so 10 days ago, since the main border crossing for aid closed, the Rafah crossing, our storage facilities have been destroyed and looted. There's almost nothing left to distribute in Gaza. And so as soon as something comes into the strip, and it's a trickle, it has to go out for distribution. It's, of course, nowhere near enough. We have to make very difficult choices every day. We have to prioritize the most vulnerable. We have to deliver partial rations. And that's honestly quite heartbreaking on a daily basis.
A lot of people around the world are upset by this destructive conflict. Do you have a message for them?
People here don't understand how it is that the world is allowing this to happen. I remember when I entered Gaza the first time, the Ministry of Health had reported that about 29,000 people had been killed. And by the time I left, 5 weeks later, the number had risen to 34,000 reported killed. Now, I did the math on that, and I landed on about 6 people killed per hour on average. Mostly women and children. We know that we're starting to identify bodies and we're letting it happen. So, you know, I'm lucky. I'm the mother of 2 little boys. They are 2 and 4. And I'm terrified that one day they're going to ask me how we couldn't stop this, how the world didn't stand in solidarity and voice their outrage loudly, loudly enough to make it stop. Why we let children go hungry? Why we let them live in terror? Why we let them go months and months without an education? I don't have an answer. And I think my invitation would be that people need to reach out to their decision makers, demand that international law be respected, that the most basic human rights and the most basic human dignity be respected. We're not asking for much, just the law that already exists to be respected, because this war is a stain on us all, and it is everyone's responsibility to work at all levels to make it stop now. That's my invitation, that everyone ask themselves every day, what can I do today at my level to help end this nightmare?